The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, Kentucky bourbon. Oh my gosh. When you go down there, there could be a bar with 1,000 bottles on it. It looks great, and it's all bourbons. And everybody down there is an expert. But good for you and good for Paul. Everything. Hey, Kentucky, you need a little bit of that.
Yeah, Kentucky, baby. There will not be any Kentucky ex-quarterbacks on this podcast. Big Phil is a no-show today. But there will be mentioned more of the Kentucky sponsor of Woodford Reserve Distillery on the Chris Sims Top 40. So that's for sure. No doubt about it. I mean, really, they probably should have sponsored my dad's father back in the day. That's really where we should go.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, he liked the bottle. He's pretty famous for liking the old bottle.
Do you remember these scenes?
I don't remember those scenes. By the time I grew of age, he had kind of cleaned up his act a little bit. But my dad said, yeah, he's pretty famous for coming home and, you know, yelling at the kids and telling them what's wrong with their lives and things
like
that.
Bad movie.
Well, yeah, this is Willie Sims. Now, yeah, Willie was a tough SOB. He was like one of those guys, as soon as you met him, you're like, he seems like he's no nonsense.
Yeah.
He's famous. Okay, Paul, and you may have heard this story before. Yeah, he hit too many bottles one night, okay? Well, he has Thanksgiving dinner.
All right.
He can't finish his Thanksgiving meal.
Because he's had too many.
He has a tooth problem, a toothache.
Uh-oh.
So he decides then to go meet up with his friends, and he gets shit-faced.
Yeah.
And then calls the dentist and
on
goes to the – it was either – or the very next – early the next morning. The details of that part, I'm like, was he up all night? Or did the doctor really call? So it's a little shady, that part of it. But had all his teeth pulled.
All?
Every one of them. Pull them all out. My fucking one tooth ruined my meal. Pull them all out.
No.
And he went to dentures. Yes. That is like a total psycho Sims move right there. Like that is, if you could like put a Sims stubborn moment, that's what it is. But yeah, that's like one of the best stories I've ever heard.
I had one bad one. Take out the other four.
Right. Yeah. I had one bad. Yeah. How dare you take a shot at my Kentucky family like that? They have more than four teeth.
You can pile on any Iowa joke.
Yeah.
Like
it's all right. It's similar.
At any point, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was also, speaking of Iowa, because you guys, you know, got your corn up there and
that's all right. Yeah.
The greatest corn eater I've ever seen either.
Respect.
I mean, just
yeah,
and his teeth would be like not even connected to his mouth, and they'd be hitting and eating, and this crap is unbelievable. So I'm sorry I brought
my
that
grandpa,
up. I didn't mean to.
Who owned a farm?
Right.
Two sentences to me in my entire life.
Yeah.
One, don't go near the pigs, boy.
Right.
Apparently the pigs were mean out of the farm.
Right.
Number two, why don't you eat more, boy? That was it.
That was it
for about 18 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had a similar grandfather.
Yeah.
He wasn't much different to me either.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't, you know, you better play hard, boy.
No.
You know? You practicing, boy. You tough boy.
Always ended with boy, didn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, boy is a big thing. Big thing, for sure. No doubt about it. Or Bigum. Biggin.
I didn't.
Biggin. Oh,
okay.
You ever hear Biggin?
I heard of
my
it.
Dad, you'll hear him if you talk to him enough. He'll be like, how you doing, Biggin? And you're like, Biggin? What the fuck is that? Like,
from Kentucky.
But that's Kentucky slang right
down
there. No doubt, Biggin.
Yeah. It's been a couple weeks.
I know.
Good
what's
to
up?
See you.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we're talking, you know, whiskey and grandparents.
Grandparents,
I was all ready to talk about your next four quarterbacks, a little bit of Woodford.
Yeah, we got to change it up a little bit. You know, we can't just come in talking football like just for 2 hours straight. I got to have a little
especially
diversity. We could have had more topics if you ever sent in that weenie bikini picture.
No,
but,
no,
you know,
failed.
We don't have
I failed.
That. So,
I know.
Okay.
I know. It was top of mind. Next Olympic quad, I'll go visit the men's team.
Okay.
Okay.
Where it might be more appropriate.
When I'm 54.
I'm dressing.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So before we hit the quarterbacks, I understand we have a little bit of news out of South Florida.
Yeah.
And in June, when you have anything newsworthy in the NFL, got to spend some time there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think, you know, in general, here's where I'd like to start with it. Just like a little bit of throwing in the reins become a subject here lately.
And this is okay? Tua-based, right?
This is Tua-based. And even, you know, I think we might even go up to New England because we got some clips there, too.
Right.
Because this came out the other day. People talking about, you know, Cam Newton struggled throwing in the rain. Here's a few clips of him missing throws. And then here's Mac Jones completing them. Oh, let's bench Cam and start Mac just because of that. But there is something to throwing the ball in the rain. There's no doubt. You have to adjust. You know that.
Awful.
Right. It's awful.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the butt. You can't spin the ball. You can't throw the ball as aggressively as you want to, which, of course, can dictate the accuracy of the throws and a lot of those issues. Now, like, here, no issues, right? They both kind of, the ball was dropped, throws it easy. But I could see, like, Mac Jones compared to what I see from Cam here, and I know this film's not doing justice to how rainy it is here. It's raining a little harder than it looks. But Mac Jones, as you can see here, has taken something off the ball on his throws. He's gone, wait, I'm not going to be able to throw my 100-mile-per-hour fastball exactly the way I want to. Cam Newton took the approach of, hey, screw you, rain. I'm just going to throw the ball the way I throw it. But as you can see, that led to pretty-looking throws, nice spirals, good velocity, but lack of control of the ball was real. This one was good, you know, from Cam. You see there, though, he dialed it back a little. This, like, perfect back of the end zone throw by Mac Jones. But here, he tries to put a little mustard and throw his normal way, and I'm sure the ball squirts out of his hands to a degree. You know, again, the object is wet, so the tighter you grip it,
right,
the more it's going to squeeze out of your hands. And that, see, again, just too violent. To like thinking, no, it's not dry, the ball's not sticky, you're not going to be able to do that. There's a throw by Mac Jones where people might go, that's not impressive, is that realistic? Yeah, it's a one-on-one jump ball, and his right. guy had a chance to catch it, and the guy before didn't have a chance to catch it, so it is realistic.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know what you thought of. I've had these conversations with Dad through the years. I did not like throwing a wet ball.
It's terrible.
But you had to adjust how you threw the football,
yeah.
And not all quarterbacks do that.
Right.
And I think the big thing is I was a squeezer of the ball. I think you were too. We've discussed this.
Yes.
I mean, I wanted to grip it. I wanted to break the ball when I squeezed it. I really did. That's how I was. But that's the worst thing for throwing in the rain. You know, and great quarterbacks like Troy Aikman, John Elway, Troy hated it.
Yeah.
So did John Elway. 49 Broncos against the Falcons, that Super Bowl. The Shanahans have told me this. Before the game, all they were worried about was please don't rain. There was a rainstorm coming, and they were like, man, Elway struggles throwing the ball in the rain. It poured right when the game was over.
Yeah.
But, yes, they were grippers of the football too. So when you have that, you kind of got to grip it lightly. Right? You almost got to let it lay in your hand a little bit to a degree. Get a little moisture in my hand. And because you're just not going to be able to control it and do this type of stuff and pump it. And that's where you saw, like, Mac Jones, he kept it real connected. He was like, okay, I'm just going to keep my arm and my body all together, one speed, and it might not be a laser, but it's going to go where I want.
Mm-hmm.
Cam decided just to stick with it. I'm going to grip it, and I'm going to let my arm go, have a violent motion, and try to do it. But as you see, you lose control of the football.
It's almost like you have to be comfortable shot putting the ball because you have to have it in your palm.
Yes.
And when you're really ripping the ball, I don't know how you were in 2 days, but I always get this like this massive callus on the tip of my finger because it's always coming off your finger when you're doing it the right way.
Right.
In the rain, it's more of just a push from your palm.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult thing to get comfortable with.
Got to get comfortable with that. You're right. It's not going to feel the same. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be as pretty. And then, you know, off of that, and this is where we jump into Tua, I think, because Tua's got the 5 interceptions in a rainy practice. And again, yeah, it's rainy, and we don't know the full context of those interceptions, too.
Right.
It might be raining. Ball might have gone through a few guys' hands and just squirted up in the air, and it was a perfect throw. You know, but I will say this. You do have to, I think, you know, kind of evaluate your expectations a little bit when it's rainy, too. You're not going to be able to make some of the same throws. You have to change your decision-making to a degree. You know, and that was the thing that came out of Tua. Tua had a quote of, like, you know, trying to be aggressive still. Right, and do that type of stuff. Sure, aggressive is great, yes, but aggressive within the limits of rain is different than aggressive within the limits of it's a great day and the ball is sticky and I can really spin it. And that's something a young player sometimes has to get used to. You know, dry day, oh, wait, I think I can fit that 30-yard ball in between those two guys down the sideline. Wet day, you're not going to be able to. But are you going to have enough, you know, wits about you to adjust that thought in your brain in a game situation to go, ooh, I don't like that. Let me just do something a little safer. And that's the fine line young quarterbacks have to find, and really all quarterbacks have to figure out when they throw the ball in the rain.
I think another thing to keep in mind, I'm going to tie it together with college football too. Anytime you have a quarterback in college entering spring ball who's not in a quarterback competition, he's going to be the guy no matter what.
Yeah.
Go to the NFL. You're looking at June workouts and workouts in May. You're going to be the guy no matter what. When that's there, you never know what a coach has told him about priorities heading into that offseason.
Like, sure.
You know what? I know picks bothered you in the fall. Let's not worry about them right now. Yeah. I want you to be more risky, to take more chances than you will in the fall, just to kind of get used to that feeling. Let's see what we can do.
Yeah, sure.
So rain aside, you never know what he was told about, hey, let's try and fit it in there in a way that you wouldn't do it in the fall. That might be a part of it, too.
I don't disagree with that. And then this is the time to do it, right? We've heard those old quotes.
See
of
what
like,
it feels like.
Right. We've heard Aaron Rodgers. He's made the quotes in the past of like, hey, the offseason is a great time for me to see what I can get away with.
Exactly.
And know where that, you know, that baseline is. So, yes, there's definitely something to that. And you never do know. You know, the context does matter, like we're talking about. You know, my dad, you know, he's not on here today, but I could tell you, he'll tell you, he had games where he was literally walking in the tunnel onto the field, and Parcells would be next to him and go, hey, Sims, if you don't throw an interception or two today, then you haven't been aggressive enough.
Yeah.
You're not trying to make any plays. And that's the way the game was a little bit more back then. But yeah, you're right. You never know the message. That might be a real message for Tua. You know, realistically thinking about his year last year, how conservative he was, some of the question marks about some of the power throws. We didn't see that. I'm sure that's a real thing on their mind down there right now, and he's trying to do that. But again, five interceptions, that's a lot
of
interceptions.
That's a big number.
That's a big number. I don't care what you are, who you are, Hall of Famer, first year, whatever. That's a big one. And I would imagine that even if some of them weren't his fault, he's going to be pissed off, feel the pressure a little bit. You know, like in my day, I mean, first off, if I threw a five-interception day in OTAs or minicamp with John Gruden...
Going to put his arm around you and tell you it's okay?
No, absolutely not. I'm probably going to get demoted. Right. Like, no joke.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to be demoted. If I was a second stringer, I'm going to third.
And you knew that. And like, it's hard to not have that worry on your mind
definitely,
sometimes.
But it helped my decision-making to go, you know what? Let me not fucking throw that ball into the hole down
check
there.
Check it down.
Yeah, let me check it down. Or, hey... You know, there's that fine line again, too, of like, you don't want to go ultra conservative to now where you got a 10-yard curl route and the guy's open, but you're like, oh, I'm going to check it down there.
Yes.
That'll piss the coaches off the other way to go, hey, I know it's rainy, but it's a fucking curl route and he's wide open.
Right.
Just throw it at him. Like, come on. You know, that, so, but yeah, you know, that would be real issue with Gruden's world and doing that at any practice. It didn't matter. He kind of evaluated us off of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I would be pissed off regardless whether he was pissed or not. If I threw a pick or even two in OTAs or a minicamp, it was haunting me all night.
Yeah.
It was going to bother me until the next day's practice started, and then I could start to erase those memories with good plays or something like that. So it won't be taken lightly just because it's a minicamp and it's Tua and he's figuring out his way still. That number is still a jarring number for players, coaches, and everything, and we'll see where it goes.
And also a story at cornerback.
Oh.
Not quarterback, but cornerback. In Miami, that I think is worth kicking around a little bit, too.
I think so, too. Like, to me, this is one of the more intriguing, like, under-the-radar stories in football right now. Xavien Howard, who you and I both know is really awesome.
Awesome, yeah.
Might be one of the best, you know, to play the ball skills corners in football. Of course, was an interception leader in the league last year, but hasn't been there. And
how many games has he missed?
I mean, so this is where it's weird. He's real good.
Yep.
We got that.
No doubt.
He's a top five corner. I got no problem saying that. Is he a little underpaid for what the current market is? Yes. I mean, the corner across from him on his own team is being paid more than him, and he's better than him. Darius Slay's making more than him. He's better than him. I get it. But at the same time, and I'm always pro player. We both
are. Yeah.
Florio is everything. This is one I have a little bit of a hard time getting behind Xavien Howard here. I do a little.
Because he just signed his new contract how long ago?
2019.
It's not long ago.
2019.
Yep.
So then in 2019, he gets a big deal where at that time people were like, whoa, that's a lot of money for Xavien Howard. Wow. You know, that's pretty damn good. 2019, he plays four games. He played four. So they made an investment in you and paid you more than maybe you were worth actually at that moment, kind of seeing the future a little bit. You got hurt. They let you miss 12. Not that they let you miss 12. You missed 12 games. They didn't penalize you, whatever. There was no stink about it. You come back, you play good. I don't know. To me, it just seems a little early to be asking for it.
100%.
And I guess I have a little problem with it to a degree. Now, the contract, it's not the best. But
it's not awful.
It's not awful.
I mean, he's
exactly right.
About $1 million a game. Kind of exactly. in that category.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I think it's been enjoyable, whether it's NFL or other sports, to see the players get a little bit more of this control with the contracts
right.
and where they play. Very interested to see where it goes. And if it stays kind of player-friendly this way.
I know.
If they can dictate a little more than they have. This one reeks a little bit of, you know what, you're not helping the cause here. Your deal isn't that bad. It's not very old. You missed more than half of one of the two seasons you played under this deal. If I'm at the NFLPA, or if I'm one of these players who's thinking about, you know, I have enough leverage where I'm going to make a non-traditional stance here soon, what Howard is doing is not helping the future causes because the optics aren't that good.
No, I don't think they are.
Right?
I don't, yes. This is the kind of thing where, of course, you know, media fans look at it and go...
But players are looking at it, too.
I agree. They are definitely looking at it, yes. And this is where it's a tough one. Because players in the locker room are going to go, wait, it's a business.
Yeah.
And they're going to go, he's the best corner in football. He's better than Jalen Ramsey. Or he's certainly better than some of the guys that are being paid more than him.
Right.
Hey, it's a business. Tough. He wants more. I know. But there are also going to be a lot of guys, especially the ones that haven't got their piece of the pie yet and everything like that.
That will have a much better argument soon.
Yes, right. And they're going to sit there and go, dude, they took care of you.
Recently.
Like, a little earlier than maybe they even had to.
Yeah.
You know, they were kind of somewhat player-friendly and giving them the deal before they had to that way. And here it is. Like, I guess it's just 1 year too early. And again, I'm not trying to get involved in any business, but it's our job to talk about these things. And I think this is going to be a real thing if this goes into training camp because the Dolphins are like the Patriots. It's Brian Flores. He puts his corners on an island all game long. We talked about it the last time you were here. Last year, they were famous for all-out blitzing, leaving your corners with no safeties. Well, they can do that because they have really talented corners. It would change the dynamic of their football team if he's not out there. So that's where I find it intriguing. And I think it's a year too early.
Yeah.
If he had another good year this year, and then, you know, he came out January, I was like, I'm not coming back. I'd be like, dude,
it'd be totally different.
You're totally underpaid. You put 2 years together, a special play.
Right.
It's time to go get it.
Right.
But you missed, 66% of the season before, more than that, 75% of the season before.
Right.
And you've done this. And to me, that's where the timing is a little off.
You know what would be really cool?
Yeah.
And I don't think this will ever happen. But like in the draft, you start talking about trades in the first round to move up. There's literally a point chart that lives inside all 32 buildings. And they know. Everybody knows. You may not agree with it.
Yeah.
But they're all working off the same chart.
Right.
If there was something for players who felt like they had a gripe against their current contract, there are some kind of points that said, okay, it's been 2 years. You played this many games. You're rated this. You know what? It's not quite ready for you to make this stance. If there was something official like that.
It's a good idea by you, actually.
That would be really the word that comes to mind is fun. It'd be fun for us, but I mean, it would be so helpful.
It'd be a good guideline for players. You know, to just go like, wait, am I being realistic here?
Exactly.
Does it make sense?
Right. There'd be something universal that everybody could look at and be on the same page.
I don't think that's crazy. In fact, if I was an agent listening to this, I might try to
ask Florio.
I might try to get
him.
Somebody in on the works under me to go. Let's see if we can't create a formula that makes sense a little bit there to maybe apply some value to this just to guide the players and guide the agents to a degree.
Right.
But you just talk about Xavier Howard, and then up 95 with Stephon Gilmore right now.
Yeah.
Man, I mean that's two guys who. Are big pieces of their football team.
I can imagine either one of those defenses without them.
Ooh, I mean, they put a lot of pressure on their corners.
Yeah.
That's where I'd be interested to see where this goes with both guys because I just can't see Bill breaking the bank for Stephon Gilmore at this point in his career.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they find another way to give him a sweetener for 1 year, something like that. And the Xavier Howard thing... You know, where it looks a little selfish is like, this is where it just looks bad, too. Early in the contract, the team, it's finally here. The Dolphins are here. They haven't been here in forever. And now the team's here, and you're one of the best players, and you want more. And that's where it looks bad to me.
Totally
and again,
agree.
I'm not trying to tell anybody how to run their business or do anything that. But I
think
I guess
it means
I'm
even more because coming from you, because I know how pro player you are on when it comes to these kind of things.
Yeah, I am. I definitely am. And you know, I do want players to use the avenues available, but there is a little bit of business ethics, I guess, and morality that that has to go on here. And some realisticness in the situation, too. I'm not just going to always side with the player blindly.
Sometimes you got to throw a flag and say, you know what, this one doesn't smell quite
right. Doesn't smell quite right to me. Exactly right. So we'll see where it goes. You know, again, now they did draft a corner 2 years ago in the first round. So they're not, like, desperate to go, we don't have a guy that's there. They have three legit corners. So maybe that makes him expendable. I don't know where that goes from there. You know, either way, maybe he becomes trade bait. You know, but again, if you're going to get trade, everyone's going to know, oh, we got to pay him too. So that's going to be part of the issue.
Right.
And then the last guy, just secondary. Yeah. You got to bring up Jamal Adams real quick. Just because Jamal Adams is the only one I look at that just go, guaranteed he's going to get paid. Don't worry about it. Like, they traded away two first-round picks for him. I think if we had a draft of the 10 best players in football and there was 10 of us, at least eight of us would take him in the top 10. Like, he's right there in the top 10 best defensive players in football, an important piece for that football team. You know, I just think that's one where they're just figuring out the details, and it's only a matter of time before they make him the highest paid safety in football.
Right. Yeah. I mean, hopefully for, I mean, all the news coming out of Seattle to talk about winning at the highest level with all the focus on Wilson.
Right.
They don't have that guy.
They got to have him.
I mean, you can forget all that talk that we've heard from Wilson and everybody else last week.
No doubt.
How about some top quarterbacks?
Hey, let's do it.
All right. This is in partnership with Woodford Reserve Bourbon, the Sims Top 40 Quarterback Countdown with four more. Buy something you'll want to see Dad open this Father's Day. Woodford Reserve Bourbon. Find your dad's Woodford Reserve bottle at your local retailer or have it delivered today by Drizzly. That's
bam.
Nice.
Bam. That was good for you right there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was real professional.
Thank you. Thanks, Pete.
Man, we pay you.
Pete chimed in,
too.
Is that how it works? All right. You have moved into the top 10. Well, I've been out doing some other things. You've covered a lot of ground.
We have, yep.
We're into the top 10.
Here we go.
I would imagine some people have let you know they're real happy and real upset with some things you've done leading up to this
moment.
No
joke.
Yeah.
When I made Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, top 10.
Yeah,
I thought, man, people are going to like this. Yeah. I don't think I'll get as much hate for making them 10 this year.
No.
It might be the worst I've seen yet. I don't know. It's unbelievable. The guy gets older.
Have you retaliated?
Well, I mean, my retaliation would be simple. I'd be like, I want to be like, did you watch the first 12 games of the year last year? So fuck off with you thinking him being higher than that. Did you see his team, the best team in football? Oh, that's right. Fuck off once again. Did you see the NFC Championship game where there was almost one of the biggest meltdowns we've seen out of any quarterback in a championship game ever? If they lost that game, we'd all be going, I don't know. Brady might not have it. Yeah. I don't know. Does he still have it? Do you think he can really do it? I mean, that's where we were at. But now people want me to rank him at 2 or 1. Like, get out of here. Like, Pete, tweet that out to everybody. At everybody, get the fuck out of here if you think he's better than 10. Yes,
Pete,
yes.
Yeah, Pete says
at all of Twitter. Just tweet it to Twitter. Go at Twitter. Sim said, shut the fuck up. He's 10.
I know it's trouble with these new mics when you get the grip arm, and the F-bombs start coming.
Yeah, I do. I'm sorry, Kristen.
The heart rate is up.
The F-bombs have been coming plenty today.
Okay, we are set to go 8, 7, 6, and 5.
Yeah.
Good story attached to all of them. At number 8, who's on your mind?
That's right. Matthew Stafford is on my mind. Yeah, Matthew Stafford. You say what you want. I don't give a damn. Go ahead. Start the hate right now. Yep. You know who's going to get the last laugh if you start the hate right now? Me. Because he's on a team now, and everybody's going to see what he's really worthy of this year. So I'll get the last laugh because I'm going to go, oh, yeah, you thought it was just him. It's just him. He's the only reason Detroit hasn't gotten to the playoffs and wins playoff games. Yeah, right. He still has one of the greatest game-changing arms in the history of the NFL and still one of the best game-changing arms, most explosive arms in the NFL right now at this moment. That's where it starts. You can say what you want, but he does things with his right arm that very few people in this league can do. You know, it's in the echelons of Mahomes, Rodgers, and Josh Allen. It's those far as you just want to talk about crazy, gifted, unbelievable throws that nobody else on the planet can make. That's what he does, and he makes them look so routine in things at times, and because they don't win or go to the playoffs, we just kind of go, huh? But, like, if anybody sat down and watched some film with me and we watched Matthew Stafford, you're going to come away with a lot more plays than you realize to go, holy shit, what a throw. Holy shit, what great movement in the pocket, and then what a throw. And it's just going to be one thing after another. And what you'll slowly start to realize is, like, their team would just be absolute garbage if it's not for him. And that's all there is to be said. So, yes, is he perfect? No. But I think a lot of the problems Matthew Stafford has are team-related, people around him-related, offensive scheme-related, and we're in this era of we just blame one guy. And, of course, you know I don't like that.
Let's stay with that blame thought. Yeah. Not blaming just him, but, I mean, I think a cynic would push back and say, God, he was there 12 seasons. They never won a single playoff game.
I know.
A lot of issues in the organization.
Sure.
Personnel-wise,
yeah.
Coaches coming and going, GM, same thing.
Right.
What part of his game, though, do you look at and say, okay, he wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
This is part of the blame that goes to him
right.
for over 10 years of pretty mediocre football.
Sometimes maybe overdoing it, you know, crossing the line of, like, I'm going to make a play. I'm going to do something right here, right? You know, yeah, did he do that sometimes? There's no
doubt.
It's hard not to. That's where I want to explain to people. When you know your team's the lesser team and you've lost a few weeks in a row and yet you've played awesome, that next week you could come out and go, I'm going to take a few chances early, and then you're down 14-0. And you're like, damn, you know, they weren't the worst decisions. I just tried to take a few chances to get our team going. And it compounded. And then people go, oh, see, Stafford's got him in the hole. See, this is why he's not a quarter. No, that's not why. There's a lot of context to the situation and what got him there. I can also show you a bunch of games where he's up 14-0. And before you wipe your nose and blink, they're already losing 17-14 because their defense has given up the lead.
Right.
So there's so much of that. You know, and that's it. But if there's one area, it's that. Maybe just at times letting the game come to him, maybe, okay, from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I just come away with – it's his every year. I come away after studying him again in the offseason and going, holy cow.
We got to give him
more. 12 seasons, like you said.
Yeah.
I know no playoff wins. What up there is – what, like you said too, what up there was screaming playoffs and success? What? Tell me what you were thinking that he dropped the ball on not being successful enough. Was it that, you know – NFL-altering big-time defense? Oh, right. No, it wasn't. Was it that NFL-altering big-time run game? Oh, that's right. That's never existed since he's been there. Was it the pass protection? No. Was it the weapons? No. Those are good, but not great. So, like, again, it's too unrealistic that way. And, yes, he had Calvin Johnson. I know. He did special things. Unfortunately, we can't name anybody else on the offense at that time except for those two guys, and that's
right.
Where I get back to.
Yeah.
You know? So go ahead. Well, oh, last thing with
yes.
the playoff thing.
Yeah.
Been in the playoffs, what was it? Three times, I think.
Yeah.
They lost to the Saints early in his career.
Cowboys once.
Cowboys, I mean, that was the game where they called pass interference and then picked up the flag. They're going to win the game.
Right.
So that was the Brandon Pettigrew game.
Yeah.
He can't referee, too. So everybody would sit there and tell you that was a really questionable call.
Yeah.
His other loss up in Seattle in a wild card round a few years ago, hey, he can't catch the ball either.
Right.
I mean, go back and watch it. He made throws and plays in that game to win the game. It was there to be had that night against Seattle. They could have won that game. His team let him down.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you go, oh, he's 0-2 in playoffs or 0-3 in playoffs. And I go, yeah, two out of the three, he played really good and they should have won. But he was fucked over one shape or form of another, and that's where we're at. So I'm really ready for him to crap on some people this year.
I think the most interesting part of the story, the one I'm most fired up to talk about, isn't looking back and defending what happened or didn't happen. It's kind of looking ahead to what he's going to be with McVay in that offense. I do want to point out that you had him ninth last year. So you had him in the top 10 even when he was on a team that wasn't very good.
Yeah.
So you thinking he's of this caliber didn't take a giant step forward just because he's on a better team now. You thought this before.
I did.
Just wanted to point that out.
Yes, thank you.
So looking ahead to the Stafford and McVay relationship, I remember a number of times sitting here the last couple of seasons when we talked about the Rams, you said McVay is propping up Goff.
Yeah.
He's making him look better.
Right.
What can McVay do now where he doesn't have to, as you said, prop up his starting quarterback?
Yeah. No, I think, you know, he'll still be able to run his normal system and do everything like that, which is going to prop up Matt Stafford because he's going to be like, yeah, your normal system.
Yeah.
I haven't been in a system this good. This is great. And, you know, so then even within the normal system, he's going to take advantage of some plays that you know, Jared Goff didn't. Just because, hey, of course he's a better player. He's played more. And then the talent of his arm to where, let's just take one of those famous bootlegs by the Rams, right? Bootleg to the right. Here comes, you know, let's say the fullback in the flat. And on the right sideline, that receiver over there is running the 20-yard comeback, right? A lot of the times that's the route you have on the outside versus that bootleg type thing. You know, if it was close, Jared Goff would probably just go, it's a little too tight. All right, here you go back, or here you go 10-yard crosser. Matt Stafford's going to go, close? He's fucking wide open. I'm going to throw a laser and hit him in the numbers. Yeah. First down. And that's going to put, of course, more pressure on the defense and maybe now make them play some different defenses to take some of those things away. But I think ultimately, like I've always been saying, it's going to open up McVay. Because it's like we always talk about. It's like you hear my dad go, arm strength isn't important, you know, when he starts that whole rant. Mm-hmm. Of course it is. McVay's going to be able to dial up plays on play action and bootleg where he's just going to go, I couldn't ask Jared to make this throw.
Right.
This guy makes this throw 10 out of 10 times in practice.
Right.
So we're going to do it, you know. And then, whoa, he does that easy. Let's do something else crazier. Let's have him roll out to the right and throw a post corner to the backside of the field 50 yards on the other sideline. Oh, okay, no problem. He can do it. Whoa, that's a cool part of my offense. So that's, to me, where I think it can be really fun this year.
Whose life improved most with this deal, McVay or Stafford?
I think Stafford.
Yeah.
I do. McVay, I mean, yeah, as we can see, is very happy in the fact that he had to put that back in the bottle and be like, well, I'm not too happy. I mean, like, come on. Like, who cares? Right. But, yeah, I think it is him, you know, ultimately. And, you know, as you could tell, I hold the guy in high regard. I really do. You know, what about that team last year said they were supposed to be any better than what they were? You know, that's the thing. He's plays through injury. He's always beat up. He's always getting hit. Pass protection was never something that was popular there in Detroit and running game. Oh, great. I get to play a quarterback on a team that not a great offense. We don't run the ball. We don't protect. That's awesome. Let me sign up for that. I mean, that people are unrealistic in what they expect sometimes. And I'll say this. Last thing I'll say before we move on to the next guy. I mean, there he is, early December, week 13. They're playing the Bears, and they win the game. They beat the Bears because of Matt Stafford and his unreal arm. I mean, that's why they do it. They were down, and they come back because he just makes some throws that you just go, man, there's only two or three guys in the league that do that. So there they are. That game gets over. They're 5-7. The Bears are 6-6. The Lions aren't even in the same stratosphere as far as talent on the field of the Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears had everything except really the quarterback. And okay, the offensive line's not great. It's maybe a little below the middle of the road, but everything else is there. To where I just would go, like, man, if you switch quarterbacks, I can promise you that one team would have been 6-6.
Right.
And that one team wouldn't have been 5-7.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just a point that jumped out to me. And I know they fell apart at the end of the year. But, and again, anybody that was watching those games, you can't sit here and tell me it was Stafford's fault.
Right.
I mean, He wiped his nose and blinked twice, and he was down 40-0 against the Buccaneers the day before Christmas. They have issues across the board while he was there.
Thinking of that, before we move on, I have one final thought about him. You know, he dealt with decade-plus in Detroit this feeling of having to do too much. Boy, if I'm not awesome because our defense isn't great, our team isn't great, we are not going to win this game.
Yeah.
He leaves that behind. Now you're supposed to win 11, 12, 13 games.
Yeah,
you're supposed to have success in January.
Sure.
You leave behind one rotten feeling that can make you play a certain way. To pick up another one that's brand new for him.
I know.
I mean, he had it at Georgia, but that was a long time ago.
It's going to be an adjustment.
Yeah.
There is. And, you know, it's going to be an adjustment a little bit to where he's just going to go, wait, I don't have to be crazy here. We got Aaron Donald. We got a defense. We can run the ball. I don't have to, like, you know, we're down 14-3, and I don't have to, like, scramble and try to throw some laser down the middle into a tight window that, yeah, could be good, but it could be an interception, and now we're down 21-3. That's where he's going to have to, like, go, wait, this is different here. I got a coach, a team around me. It's not all about me and everything that way.
And if we lose two in a row, it's not okay.
No, if you don't. He's going to have more pressure on him as far as expectations, for sure. But I think this is going to be a wanted pressure, a relief of not having to do it all himself and having that support system.
A welcome feeling.
Yeah.
All right, Matthew Stafford there at number 8. Looks like we're staying in the NFC West for number 7.
That's right. We're going to Kyler Murray. That's right. Oh, baby, Kyler Murray. There's me putting my makeup on. Damn, I'm good at it. I don't know why they use that. But Kyler Murray, wow, where to start? I'm not sure if there's anybody that has more effect on their team's success and their offense in football maybe than Kyler Murray, okay? That's a bold statement.
It is.
Not saying he's the best quarterback in football, but man, does he have a tremendous effect because of his God-given talents to what their team is. And I say that because of this, Paul. I just go, first off, like, nothing about Arizona's offense says top six in football to me. And then rushing the football. I mean, you can Arizona's this number seven team in football and running the football?
Because
of one guy.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Everything on their offense is predicated around the talents of this guy. Nobody's sitting there going, man, I'm worried about Arizona because they're just going to line up and smash it down our throat and run the football and we can't stop them. No. They're more worried to go, damn, they're going to spread the field, and that little fucker can run everywhere. And then they got a few quarterback design runs for him. And wait, I want to play this defense because he's scrambling, and we got to contain him. And there's all these things go into an offense that I think is not super creative. You've heard my complaints there, and I think that has to change for them because they put too much pressure on Kyler Murray.
All that not real aggressive either.
Not a real aggressive either. And we've showed some of the spray charts from last year and things like that, how predictable DeAndre Hopkins' route tree. He stayed in one area the whole year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all the same thing. So there's not a lot of diversity there. And how they overcome it is because they have a quarterback who's got three rockets up his ass. He's got a rocket for an arm. And he's cool and calm under pressure. And that, to me, is where, you know, he's different that way.
Do you think Cliff Kingsbury is holding him back a little bit? Because he's also the offensive coordinator.
I know. Yeah, I do. I think it has to improve. I have to. I know you remember me last year just going, there's got to be more to the offense. It can't be shotgun, four wide, throw the ball quick all game long. There's got to be more to the route combinations. There's got to be more formations and personnel sets just to change it up. You know, and I think that's the big thing for me. But still, when you look at all that and you say, yeah, it's really not that impressive, I'm not scared of their offense, you look at it statistically and go, well, they're at the top of football, and that's because this guy and what he can do with his pure ability.
First question that came to my mind, Chris, with Kyler, and I went back and looked at it. You had him 12th last year before the season at this time, which is pretty bold.
Yeah.
Most people would not have had him that
high. No, they wouldn't. I got crapped for that last year.
Then you moved him to four.
Right.
In the midseason, I think that was early November.
Yeah.
So, I mean, seven is really, really good. How come you dropped him three from a few months ago?
I think, you know, when I he got lucky with the four. Like, he was kind of on fire in that point, and Arizona was on fire. It was right after Hail Murray, right?
That's right. I think they were 5-3.
I think so. So everything was going good, and it kind of fell off a little right after that point. You know, they went into a losing streak. I do think, you know, and again, he's alluded to this a little, but he hasn't, like, confirmed it. I think he had some tendonitis in his arm.
Shoulder.
He missed some throws and some things where you just went, man, that's not the same guy I saw early in the year. What's going on there? So he played a little banged up, I guess, and it wasn't as good. There was some missed throws and, you know, some bad decisions and things like that that, you know, I think maybe affected me. And, of course, we had a few other guys who I thought kind of thrived towards the end of the year and things like that jumped him.
Yeah.
But, man, this guy is a really, really special talent.
Awesome.
He really is. And not going to lie, I actually, you know, I really – there's a guy in front of him we'll get to in a second where I went back and forth with kind of switching them back and forth and ultimately decided to put the other guy there. But, man, Murray, you know, again, too, with A.J. Green there and – if they can just find
Rondale Moore,
exactly right. I mean, man, he's got a chance to be special. If they can find, like I was saying, just a little bit more of that diversity within their offense, give some defenses some different things to look for and prepare for, I just think they can be really dangerous because there's nothing on the field he can't do.
Right.
He's a great deep ball thrower. Of course, he can extend plays and run. He's got a quick release. The only negatives about him is his size in the pocket. There's times where you go, oh, he's going to tuck it and go down, and a big quarterback's going to stand there and go, well, I'm going to get fucking plastered, but I'm going to still throw the ball.
Right.
But he's got to protect himself. So are there plays every now and then down the middle of the field or where you just go, ooh, you know, you might have to take the big hit and you throw this and you get the completion. Yeah, there's some out there. There's no doubt. There's a handful. But he's also got he realizes he's small and he's not going to survive playing that way. And this is one of the negatives of that build.
It kind of walks me right into a Twitter question.
Yeah.
from Michael Heim. How concerned are you about the long-term availability of Kyler?
Yeah.
He's obviously talented, but seemed limited after a hot start to last year.
Yeah, he's got to protect himself.
Yeah.
And he's really good at it. Like, there's nobody
it's
better.
It's a real talent.
It really is. Yeah. He slides always appropriately. I'd challenge people, show me a play out there where he actually gets, crushed or somebody gets a square shot on him.
Yeah.
He's really good even when, the pockets collapse and he'll do the Peyton Manning and be like, play's over. I'm going down. See you later. That's great. I'm not going to let you hit me and get your defense all juiced up and, I'm banged up now and all that type of stuff. So I do think he'll be able to survive longer than our thinks that type of player can survive because he's aware. Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah, thank you.
First year they go from 5 to 8 wins.
Yeah.
What's your confidence level that they'll be anything better than 500, which I guess you can't be 500 right now.
No, you can't.
That they'll be better than 8 and 9.
I do.
You think so?
I just think Cliff is too smart not to know, I got to make more in the offense and be a little more diverse that way. Defensively, the J.J. Watt, Isaiah Simmons at middle linebacker, getting Zaven Collins with
first
him.
Round, yeah.
Yeah, they're close. They really are.
Tough division.
I think they're going to be – it's a tough division. I think they will be better. Does that result into wins and losses? I don't know. The 49ers are going to be good, too. The Rams are going to be better.
Yeah.
Seattle
will
tough.
Be
Seattle's
good
gonna
again.
Be, no, they're going to be good.
They could be better and be 8-9.
That's exactly
be 9-8
right.
And be left out of the playoffs,
They really could. There's no question. So they're an interesting team, no doubt about it. And, they had some tough losses last year. They were close. I mean, they were a playoff-ish caliber team.
Right.
And we know, they beat Washington. They beat Seattle. They did. They had some impressive wins. They beat Buffalo, of course, in the Hail Mary game. And really, other than, they really – I'm just looking at their schedule here. They didn't have any loss where the game got out of control. They got blown out, anything like that. I'm excited about what they are as a team, kind of just to see what they're going to look like in 2021.
I think even more – I'm more excited about the wins and losses, just to see him and if Cliff lets him – play quarterback a little more.
Yeah.
Let him drop back and see if he wants to throw that 18-yard dig route or come back to the 18-yard comeback route.
Definitely. I'd like to see them
capable.
Get underneath the center more and do that too.
Right?
Well, I think that's
seen
to
how
me,
many teams succeed with
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Yeah. The play action pass. And to me, that's what's going to lend itself to your point of get him away from the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Now everybody's up in the line of scrimmage because you had the run fake. Now he's got a lot of room to see. And now you can throw those 20-yard out routes that you're talking about.
Right.
He certainly has the arm to do it.
He can do it, yeah.
His arm is explosive.
Yeah.
But I do think that you're in the shotgun, you're doing all of that. I think that's another element to me that they miss out on. You imagine him underneath center, turning his back. Wait, is he giving the ball? Is he coming out the back door with a bootleg? Just that alone is scary as shit.
Think about how much it helped Baker Mayfield the more and more they got into that. With how elusive he is and how well he throws it.
Change your team.
Could be a good comp.
Yeah, definitely.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Matthew Stafford 8, Kyler Murray 7, bringing us to number 6.
That's right. Lamar Jackson. La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. Lamar Jackson.
What song is that?
Doo doo dee doo.
It's very 70s-ish.
It is. It's a real
the
song.
The old turntable.
He'll run by you.
Is it Diana Ross?
It's. I always forget.
Pete,
I think it might be Diana Ross. It's what. It's a playoff of old song. I don't know who sings it. Like again, don't ask me for rhyme or reasons where I come up with this song.
That was.
Yeah.
It's what, Pete?
In Minnie Riperton, that's what he's saying.
That was before the Upside Down 45 came out in 81.
Don't date yourself. Don't date yourself, okay? Yes. Loving you.
Loving you, yes.
I don't know.
Thank
it just
you,
hit
Pete.
Me last year. Watching Lamar Jackson, that was the thought that
I'm
went.
I'm down with that.
It's
that's
poetry
good.
When he's yeah. running. It's exciting. It's like you're in La La Land.
Yeah.
You're like, man, this is unreal.
Might turn that on the drive home.
You might do that? Okay.
Might.
Yeah, might. All right, good. Good. I'm glad I got you there. But, I mean, this is still.
Drop from 5 to 6.
Drop to 5 to 6. Sorry.
Minor.
Yep. I'm sorry. But we're still talking about maybe the most dangerous weapon in football in Lamar Jackson. Okay. Yeah. Most dangerous weapon. Maybe not the most dangerous pocket passing quarterback and doing things like that. But man, Lamar Jackson, first off, we know it's still in the class of the greatest running quarterback we've ever seen. You know, and even though last year was less than maybe some of the years before, it's still phenomenal. You know, and again, he's like some of these other quarterbacks we've talked about. The pressure he puts on you because of that skill set is, you know, you can't qualify it or quantify it. It's unbelievable what he does that way. And of course, they've done a great job of putting people around him that help that out. But I think the other thing too with Lamar Jackson, the stats won't say it and all of that. Lamar Jackson improved as a pocket passer last year.
Really?
He definitely did. Actually, every time I go back and watch it, the more and more confident I feel about that.
That he was better.
Let's run the stats,
yeah. Pete. Because the stats
won't say it, I'm sure.
Because the stats are down, whether it's pass.
Yeah.
I mean, every way you would measure, his unbelievable MVP season went to a really, really, really good season.
Really, really, really good season, exactly.
Statistically.
And, yeah. You know, hey, listen, it's just like we've seen with anything in the history of football. You know, 2019, he was a part of something that had never really been unveiled in football.
Right.
Like, whoa, this team went all in on running quarterback and has a million different running plays and 3 different running backs and 3 different – he caught the league by surprise.
Right.
So that led to huge stats.
Yes. And let's – thinking about that too, Chris.
Yeah.
Put 2019 aside. Unbelievable season. 2020, if he has 10 more of those seasons, if he has 8 more of those seasons where he's mid-60% throwing the ball, better than 3-1 touchdown interception, runs for over 1,000 yards, that's first ballot Hall of Fame.
No doubt about it.
I think he's punished a little bit because it was down from the year before.
I agreed.
But those are Hall of Fame type seasons if he does it 8 or 9 more times.
100%. I mean, he's on a Hall of Fame arc. And, yeah, the expectations were extremely high. I know everybody, I think, looks at it as a down year because they weren't 14-2 like the year before.
I mean, they,
and all those things.
It was still 11 wins.
They were still awesome.
Still won a playoff game.
Yeah, playing in the hardest division in football.
Right.
I mean, or, you know, second
one
hardest
of them,
maybe.
Yeah.
Certainly towards the top of that. You know, won a playoff game like you're talking
yeah.
about. You know, and did it with some big-time throws. And really him, it was all about him in that game. Their offense struggled. They
yeah.
found a little niche with him running, and then he made some good throws to Hollywood Brown. That was the game that game.
But they had a stretch in the season where I think it was legit to wonder about the passing game.
It definitely was.
And he's a giant part of that.
You're right.
Their last 2 playoff losses, 1 total touchdown.
Yes.
So
right.
it's almost all really positive, but as long as we're spending a bunch of minutes on the guy, there have been some moments
definitely.
In the last couple of years where you're like, okay, is this going to be awesome all the time or no?
Well, it's we're still questioning whether he can carry the team if the run game and his running ability can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I'll say, do I have the question still? Yeah, to a degree, but not like to the point to where I did last year.
What
I'll say
does
that.
He play in those questions?
Well, I, to me, it was just like when we saw teams, you know. Whether it's the Titans playoff loss from those years before or some of those games that they struggled and lost in the 14-2 season, you know, they beat the 49ers in a close game. You know, yeah, when we saw teams that had a beat on their run game and some of the cutting-edge stuff they were doing, we were going, ah, man, yeah, oh, there's a good throw, but oh, I wish it was a little better. It's not consistent, all of that. You know, this year, we can get into some games where I go, the running game's not gashing them at this moment, and they're still moving the ball and doing things at a high level. Like, I could sit there and even just think about, like, you know, the Cleveland game late in the year. You know, yeah, they ran the ball well and did good, but at the end, they had a win with him throwing the football. And guess what? They won with him throwing the football. You know, so he showed me plenty of signs of that throughout the year where I went, hey, they're not killing it in the run game. He's not blowing me away with, you know, just absolutely carving people apart with his right arm. But it was still like, man, if the guy's open, he's going to hit it. Not wide open or anything. He can throw the ball into tight windows. He can make good decisions. And let's not forget, Greg Roman's not going into the Hall of Fame for being the most creative pass game person either. So there's a part of their element of that offense that has to help out Lamar Jackson too. You've heard me say that a lot last year and things like that. There's just it's too basic
it
at times.
It brings to mind the middle of the field versus using the whole field conversation or discussion we had.
We had a lot of that, right? And just finding alternate weapons other than Mark Andrews and things like that. Right. So there was lack of diversity in the offense, lack of diversity in the schemes you see. You know, maybe not always tying the run game to the pass game together. They're a team that's talking about Lamar Jackson underneath center more this season.
Be terrific.
That's a thing they're going to do. But, yeah, I think when I take all that into account, I mean, I look at Baltimore, and I still think Lamar Jackson and everything is going in the right direction.
Right.
You know, they're not going to go 14-2 every year. But he's still improving, and I have – all the confidence in the world in his right arm and the ability. And I think it's still going to continue to go forward. Hey, Buffalo, you know, it was 10-3. He drove them down the field with his right arm.
Right.
He threw an interception, and it got returned for a pick six.
Yeah.
You're right. But it was his arm that got them down there.
You're right.
They weren't like, oh, shit, it's over. We're down by seven, and we can't run today, so we're not going to be able to win.
Right.
You know, again, I'm a fan of the player. He's as exciting as it gets, and we can't evaluate him through the lens of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
That's not who he is. This is a different animal, and he's special, special football player.
Back-to-back 1,000-yard rushing seasons can't be forgotten when you're evaluating him.
Well, that's part of it. Like, you know, again, it drives me crazy. But, like, the guy, again, we put his passing numbers up, but this is my issue with these type of players. You know, to me, there has to be a little bit more put on – the rushing aspect. Yeah, he threw for 2,700 yards last year and had 26 touchdowns. Oh, that's right. He ran for another 1,000 and ran for another 7 touchdowns.
Right.
Right. So now you talk about 3,700 yards and 33 touchdowns to go along with, you know, what was it, the 9 interceptions. You just go, fuck, that's a some year right there.
We need another new kind of formula to evaluate the quarterbacks who are running this well and also completing in the 60s and the touchdown interception ratio good because he's got all that. It's like if you take a bunch of honors classes in high school and have a 3.8, it's weighted. It looks better than if you had no honors classes in 3.8. Whatever his passing numbers are, amp him up a little bit because he keeps going for over 1,000 a season on the ground.
That might be your second good idea of the day here. You're on fire. Two of them.
It's only been about 40, right?
I mean, but
it's not a very good ratio.
But it's like, I actually like that. I think there should be some way they can figure out.
Right.
You know, the quarterback rating. Isn't it a quarterback rating or is it just the throwing rating? Is that all? Because that's what it is. It just came to my head.
Yeah.
You're right. It's a throwing rating.
Yeah.
We're not going to take into account the thing he does best and not really grade him on that. I think you might be onto something. And maybe that happens with these more and more of these guys coming to the NFL.
Let's say the off time in July, you bump into Greg Roman, Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
Shoot the shit. He says, hey, what's one thing that you would do differently with my offense 2021 with Lamar? What would be the first thing?
I want to see more of a tying together of their play action, their passes with their play action game. More of like, hey, we ran this play. Hey, it looks like we're running this play. Everything's the same. The guards pull in the back, but now we're passing the ball.
Yeah.
To me, they have a little bit of like, hey, we ran this play. Now the line slides one way and he fakes it to the back, but it's not really like a legit all-team play action fake. I guess that would be what I look at. maybe a little more diversity, like I said, in the formations and things. And let's focus on one other guy getting the ball. You know, that to me, I like that at the end of the year that they
first
finally
round receiver too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So they got two of them now.
Yeah.
You know, and they got to carve out the niche for these guys. They can't just go, we're going to run our offense and they'll get the ball.
Yeah.
That's not what teams do. Not what the good teams do. They find ways to go, wait, let's get our guy the good ball, get plays for him to get him the ball, excuse me, and then there'll be enough plays within the normal realm of the offense where the ball will go to him too. But you got to jumpstart that, get that going, get a defense to think about, oh, we have to stop him, defend him. That'll open up other avenues and things to do like I talk about all the time.
Right, and I think that first-round pick for Minnesota, Rashad Bateman,
yeah,
and also veteran Sammy Watkins, neither one has to be like, oh, wow, awesome. But if they're both pretty good, it just makes Mark Andrews better down the middle, which has been their bread and butter anyway.
I guess that's where I think it could be. They finally maybe have the guys on the outside to make you think of like, whoa, okay, yeah, we're going to leave him one-on-one. It's a little dicey, but we got to stop the run game. And,
yeah,
you know, the way he's got a powerful arm, he's got a quick release, he's not looking to scramble. That's the other thing I want everybody to know. When he drops back to pass, he works the pocket and tries to make throws within the pocket until all else fails and he takes off. You know, so here he's got a guy in Bateman who's one of those guys too that when he's covered, you can kind of throw it up to him. He's long, he's rangy, he can jump. It sounds like there's been positive reports about him. I know I was a little down on him, but I know that I had friends that loved him coming out in the draft in the NFL and things like that. So be interesting to see where they go, but I would say this is definitely the best receiving threat he's had in his young career to this point.
Right. So that's three guys down for the day. Stafford at 8, Murray 7, Jackson 6. If only there was just some news and some drama around your fifth-rated quarterback.
Oh, it's been a quiet offseason.
Seeing what we can manufacture here for number 5.
Quiet offseason. And it's not Aaron Rodgers. It's Russell Wilson. You know, I didn't want anybody to think wrong there, okay? But Russell Wilson, that's right. Number 5 quarterback in football. I mean, yes, there's no doubt that he's one of the 5 best quarterbacks in the game. There's not. I mean, the 4 in front of him are really freaking good, okay? So it was tough for me to put ahead of him. But, I mean, we're talking about a guy here that's as clutch as they come in football. You know, you could make a case he's one of the best deep ball throwers in football.
Yeah.
And then added to that, we know he's maybe the best at extent, not the best, but towards the top of football at extending plays and making plays outside the pocket. Russell Wilson's still amazing that way. There's no doubt. So, yeah, he's talented. He's got great leadership, fortitude. There's a presence on the field. He has one of those auras about him, to me at least. You tell me if you agree. When he gets the ball late in the game and they're down, I'm just going, well, they're going to score.
You expect him to make
you
it happen.
You expect it. Yeah. He's one of those short list guys where you just go, it's going to happen. In fact, you're shocked when it doesn't happen. You're like, just like, what?
Like 4th-and-12 tight game late. Like, you're surprised.
That he doesn't get it done.
If he doesn't. Yeah.
He's to that stat. That point to where you just go, if they're close in the fourth corner, I'm going with Russell Wilson. I mean, as long as they keep it close, he do. Now, at times, do I think they're maybe close because of him? If you want him to get on the negatives a little bit, could he be a little conservative with his decision-making at times? Can he leave some people open, especially down the middle of the field at times, because maybe because of, you know, lack of height? Mm. Also, I think, you know, it's been years and years of a defensive coach going, don't make turnovers and don't things like that.
Yeah.
But, like, I think Russell Wilson has – I've talked about some quarterbacks, like the 2021 quarterback. You got to be able to look at the rush a little and then look back
and
up.
He does.
He does. To me, he borders on time when I go back and watch him and going, he's watching the rush a hair too much.
Yeah.
Like to where he gets the ball and he will look at the rush first. Excuse me as I drooled on myself there. He'll look at the rush first. And you're like, man, the first read's open. Like, you got to throw it. You got to be looking at him.
Yeah.
It says, you know, look at the first read, then look down at the rush. Don't do it the other way around. And there are a handful of plays, really almost every game, that I can kind of see that.
It does jump out because you don't see it with other quarterbacks.
No,
and
you
he makes
don't.
It work.
Yes.
It's hard to complain.
Right.
But it does make you sit up and you're like, is he looking at the rush?
I know.
And
no
he
doubt.
Is.
He does. And when you see really like that film, especially that back end zone film, you could see the head dip down. You can really kind of see the moment where you're going, okay, he's looking. But you're right. Anybody even watching TV, and you know, you and I have a little bit more of a trained eye, but I think any game you watch, you see a few games where you go, wait, he kind of looked like he was going to cock his arm and throw it, and the guy was open. Like, why didn't he throw it? And then they show a replay, or you watch film, and you go, well, he wasn't really trying to throw it there. He was kind of just looking at the line, trying to make a move to find a place to throw it to somebody else.
Yeah.
And that hindered him. And listen, we saw one spurt last year or two again, and this is not all his fault.
Talking about the second half of the season?
Yeah.
Let's run those numbers.
Yeah, go ahead. Kristen, let's do it.
Pete.
Good job.
Go ahead with your thought.
Okay.
Because it'll work wherever you want to take this.
Yeah.
Bottom line, first eight games, MVP level, bottom eight games.
Yeah, it's Strugglesville. It was. Now, I'm not going to – was it Russell Wilson's fault? Sure, to a degree. There's no doubt. And where I think it was really his fault is really, to me, just on some of the turnovers. Because there's the five interceptions, and there's a handful of fumbles they lost, too.
Right.
And to me, it was the first time in the Russell Wilson career, and maybe this is why he's really, in my mind, bumped him down one spot or two spots. It's just that it's the first time I've seen him try to force things and go, like, I'm going to make the play.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to do this. Or, wait, the pocket's collapsed, and I've looked long enough. But I'm still going to hold the ball here and be looking down the field because I want to make a play.
And now that it's come out, he was more frustrated than he's ever been.
It would
make sense if he was thinking that way.
Exactly right. I mean, you go back to the Buffalo game, you go to the Rams game. There's some plays there where you just go, the Rams game, they're in the red zone. He throws that interception down the left sideline as he was scrambling up in the middle of the pocket to the right. And you go, run for 15 yards. But he, for some reason, decided to try to throw a really difficult pass in the left corner and get intercepted. Those are things I didn't see from Russell Wilson where I think you said it right. Frustration, the perception around him, the let Russ cook, all of that I feel like affected him a little bit.
Something was.
And I will say the offense became predictable, as you heard me say back then, too. That was part of it, too. I don't want to give him total blame here because they're another offense that needs to expand, and that's why they got rid of their offensive coordinator and got a new one.
Amidst all this talk about, and who knows what really happened behind the scenes, I want to talk about your reaction to that in a moment. But when it comes to last year and the last couple of years and how he has played, a lot of talk about how he was frustrated about how often he was hit.
Yeah.
And they don't have a great offensive line.
Right.
But my mind goes to watching Ben Roethlisberger the last 10 years, too, and that the way he plays, the way he creates success is different at times than other quarterbacks, and it requires moving around and getting hit because he wants to play that way.
Yeah.
I think Wilson kind of wants to play that way, too.
Agreed.
Even though he can get done from the pocket. So how much of the blame really goes to the O-line?
Yeah.
And how much of it goes to, this is how he figures out a way to play at a high level?
Yeah. I could certainly sit here around, 2016, 2017 – even 2018, and certainly look at some of those years and go, hey, those sacks, some are on Russ, but a lot was bad pass protection.
And he's been top four most sacks, if you can't see the stats, since 2013.
I know. But see, this is where you get into it, and I just go, listen, 2013, 2014, and in last year?
Yeah.
I got no problem with the pass protection.
Yeah.
There's more Russell in those
years. It's
just
the way he plays.
It's the way he plays. You got to live or die with it a little bit.
Yeah.
He's going to hold the ball, like we just talked about. Sometimes he does not take the throw within the normal rhythm of the offense. I think, one, it's because of the culture up there, and he's been a little scorned by the defensive coach thing, like you heard me.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just my hypothesis there or whatever. And then, two, hey, it's like the old talk we've had. He can do it. So he's always my whole life I've gotten away with this guy and then throwing a 20-yard pass down the field.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to live and die with that with him a little bit to that degree.
And so does he. I kind of threw my own personal flag the whole offseason when he was saying I got hit too much. I'm like, you know what? They've found a way to work around how you play sometimes. And it's worked well. I mean, they're a Super Bowl caliber team all the time because of how he's figured out how to play at a high level.
Yeah.
But with that, you're going to get hit because
you're
looking at the rush. You're figuring out which way to run. You hang on to it. So, I didn't see much validity to that. Could their offensive line be better? Yes.
Yeah,
but
sure.
He gets hit more than other quarterbacks because of how he plays.
Yeah, I think that's true, too. And that's different than the Big Ben thing you brought up. Big Ben, of course, invites some of that, too, to your point. Big Ben, though, went through a period of his career where the offensive line protection was absolutely horrible.
Right.
And he still found ways to get it done. But he had to get hit doing it and all. He couldn't run like Russell could.
Yeah.
This is part of this type of quarterback. It is. I mean, hey, John Elway was sacked.
There you go.
And I believe he retired as the most sacked quarterback in the history of football. It wasn't because he had bad pass protection. He had a lot of good all lines there. He just was like, damn, I can buy time and throw 50-yard lasers. So every now and then he was waiting to throw a 50-yard laser. And, oh, man, I got sacked. I got shoestring tackled. Those type of things. I do think we'll see less of it this year. Mm. I will be shocked if sack numbers don't go down, because I also think the sacks were also a result of the predictability of their offense to a degree. Hey, everybody knows what play. Nobody's open. Shit, I'm stuck here in the pocket. What do I do? Let me see if I can dance around and make something happen. Yeah. Oh, I'm sacked. And so there's that aspect of it that makes you hold. And also, it's not an offense about quick throws a whole lot. Mm-hmm. So he's got here now an offense that has a little bit more of that, the bootlegs and the flat like you talked about. I would think those numbers go down a little bit. Not huge. He'll probably still be towards the top of football.
Yeah.
But a little bit because of Shane Waldron.
Shane Waldron, new offensive coordinator, comes in from the Rams. I was going to ask if you think it's more because of Shane or because of Pete saying, you know what? We're going to run the ball more.
Well, no, I think it'll be because of Shane, but Pete's certainly going to have his effect on running the football. That's why they took Shane. I mean, Shane comes from McVay. McVay comes from Shanahan. They all want to run the football, but they're going to have really smart actions off of that running that are going to make things dangerous, and Russell Wilson's going to really like it. You know, he made a comment the other day about, like, man, Shane Waldron's offense is super complicated.
Yeah.
And I've always used two phrases with Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, too, a little bit. You know, and Rodgers, of course, now he's got LaFleur, there's a little more there. But they don't even know what they don't know. You know, I've always used that phrase to them. Like, and listen, that happens in football. I know people think that's crazy, but, like, that's the beauty of great offensive coordinators and things like that. I can promise you can go from one offensive coordinator and here's this play. Okay, that's how you do this play. Great. And then if we go down and hang out with Sean Payton and Kyle Shanahan and Josh McDaniels and we take the same play, they're going to give you a few clues that that other offensive coordinator didn't know. They're going to go, hey, I want this play, but I want you to look at this, and I'm going to package it with that and do this. And they're going to be like, man, I was always fucking wondered how you got that guy open like that or did that. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't even realize, because he's been stuck in a defensive team, defensive head coach, conservative offense. We're not going to let – they don't realize what they're missing, and maybe some of the advantages, like, you know, guys with the cutting-edge offensive coordinators have had because of the ideas and how they coach things that way.
As long as you bring up Russell talking in the last week about Waldron and his offense – he, of course, had to address everything that went on in the offseason. He did it in his own way. You probably talked about it with Mike. You might have talked about it with Ahmed, but I haven't had this conversation yet.
Yeah.
Your reaction to what he said in the last few days about everything that happened or didn't happen in the offseason behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's smooth, right? He's got a little bit of that politician
about
him. He
handled it in a very on-brand way.
He did, exactly right. He did. He bullshitted his way through it with a nice grin and still made you feel like he's all Seahawks, right?
Yeah.
And but that's Russell Wilson. I got no problem with that.
Yeah.
You know, also, too, here, the first thing I'll say, I give them great respect that they've kind of just swept it under the rug, said, fuck it, here we go, 2021.
Right.
And him, Pete Carroll, Schneider, they're all in it together. It's like nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
So I do give them a lot of credit for, like, how they refocus things.
I agree.
And get away with that. But, like, come on. I mean, yeah, you didn't request a trade.
But he dealt with it.
You just told everybody you would like to play somewhere else. Yeah, you didn't call the Seahawks and go, I'm requesting a trade. You just decided to tell all the football world and the media and a bunch of people behind the scenes you weren't happy, and here's a list of teams I would play for, and I'd like to go somewhere else. But I didn't request a trade.
It was very politician-like to say, I did not request a trade.
Right. So
I advanced the conversation.
Yes.
But I didn't start it.
To me, he's, because of his charm and his professionalism.
And because he wins.
And he wins, exactly right, and he's damn good.
Yeah.
He gets away with, he threw his team and organization under the bus into a capacity we haven't seen any quarterback do.
Which makes me think next, okay, and kind of building off your point.
Yeah.
They swept it under the rug. Whatever happened behind the scenes, they fixed it, and they've got an awesome quarterback and a team that can win beyond January.
Yeah.
Why can't they figure that out in Green Bay? Why can't they do the same thing? A quarterback who was clearly, he's one of the best in the game, clearly super pissed off, very pent up feelings and emotion. They found a way to get him out in front at minicamp and saying it's going to be okay.
Because Pete Carroll would have never drafted a quarterback in the first round and not told Russell Wilson and been honest with
you
him.
You can't fix that,
or do
right?
that. No, I mean, like, you can't.
That's what I keep coming to.
You like, can't.
Why can't you fix it? You can't fix
right.
that you took that kid.
And then you're going to take, you know, shots at the quarterback, too, as we go along here this offseason. He's a complicated fella and all that crap. Like, and then answer a question about, not about Aaron Rodgers, an answer about Aaron Rodgers, say he divided the fan, this is dividing our fan base. Well, I don't know. Seattle didn't make those stupid mistakes of saying that either.
Yeah.
Let alone all the other stuff that led up to it.
Kind of stayed quiet for as bad as it was early in the spring. There were quite a few weeks where nothing really
happened.
They
just let it go.
Exactly.
Yes.
And no one in Green Bay, it's not like it's being totally let go.
No, it's not being let go. Well, because it got personal.
Yeah.
It got personal. They made it personal to Rodgers, and they disrespected him personally, and that's where it's different. And, you know, yeah, I think that's really what it comes back to me. Of course, and then Aaron Rodgers is also going like, damn, you know, difference-making receivers, things like that. Can we get some of that stuff and do all of that?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that plays into the Rodgers situation. I think it's years and years of frustration added with this last year of total fuck-upness by Green Bay that not allows them to be ever, you know, kind of just repair things and go, hey, let's go forward for now, and we'll hate each other when the season's over again.
The one comment that Wilson had that I really liked, he said, you know, sometimes things are family matters. I think we can all understand that. We can't relate to being a quarterback in the NFL making $30 million a year or whatever, winning Super Bowls, but you can relate to being so close to a situation that sometimes shit gets sideways. And
yes.
You just got to take some time to figure
that's
it out.
That's right. Sometimes you'll say things to your family that you wouldn't even say to a stranger.
Sure,
you're like,
right?
Or they get to see an attitude of you that like...
Or they say things to me.
Yeah, right. All right. Or you come home and you complain about a bad day and you're pissy and moaning. You know you'd never do that around strangers, but your family, you're like, I feel comfortable and I got to let it out.
Yeah.
There's definitely... I agree with
in
you.
In that way, it was very human, like that comment.
100%.
There's so many comments that are just kind of cliche.
Yeah.
But that one you can think about. You're like, you know what?
That's why he's the ultimate professional that way.
Yeah.
And that's why he wins, and he's so driven, and just it's always like straight ahead. I got the blinders blocking out the outside noise. And listen, he's such a good bullshitter and liar.
Yeah.
He's probably already convinced himself that he didn't really want to be traded.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a Seahawk. Ever. I mean, he's got that gift. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
He could throw 7 interceptions and go home and go, I played good.
Right.
And come in the next day and be like, I was good. Like he,
right.
And that's a lot of the great quarterbacks do have that. And say what you want about Russell Wilson. He's got an incredible presence. The team, the Seahawks believe they can win any game because number 3 is at quarterback. I mean, again, you know, even though the year ended off the way it did, this is 12-4. This is the NFC West champions. And, I mean, they were what? At one point, 6-1 with the worst fucking defense we've seen in the history of football. Just everybody's got to realize that. Not the worst defense last year. Through the first 6 or 7 weeks of last year, the Seahawks defense was on pace to be the worst defense
atrocious.
In the history of football. Not just 1 year, anything.
Remember after the Buffalo game, I came in and like, I'm like, did you see that?
Well, it's funny you bring
like
it up.
They're playing with 7 guys.
Remember Buffalo? They just said, forget the run game. They're so bad at pass defense, we're going to throw it every play. Remember Pete Carroll after
shocking.
The game made a conference. He was like, I've never seen a team do that to us.
I didn't recognize. And they said, I didn't recognize
us.
What we were doing.
Yeah, right. You know? But yeah.
They were waiting for the run game.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're still waiting.
And but yet, like even in games like that, they weren't out of it because it's Russell Wilson. And he didn't play his best, but he still made a number of plays and things like that.
Yeah. At Lucas Rug asks a very good question. How do you not have a Russell Wilson song?
I know.
He said, I've got one for you. Every day I'm rustling. Like every day I'm shuffling?
I do.
He wants you to adopt that.
Okay, I will. It's got to come to me naturally.
Yeah.
So
it can't be suggested.
It can't be suggested.
Even though it is a good suggestion.
Every day I'm rustling. I do like that. That's easy. And you're taking some work off me. I might be able to work that in. We'll see.
In a way, it's too easy.
It might be.
Yeah.
You know, the other ones are like cheesy ones that I came up with just being like cheesy dad walking around the house.
We like those
best. So I like those best, right?
Yeah.
Right. Like I kind of dropped the ball. I didn't unveil. I have like a little Brady thing, and I didn't unveil that the other day.
Brady
I was a little disappointed. So
are you ready to, or you hold on to
it? I'm going
to
wait to PFT now. All right. Because we haven't got to number 10 yet on PFT.
Oh.
We're a little ahead here.
Does Mike like pay attention here and know what's up?
So probably to a degree.
He'll hop into it.
To a degree. He gets more of a kick out of like my Twitter wars against idiots that are out there than anything. He pays attention to that thoroughly.
I can totally see it.
Yeah.
Hey, how about since we had some NFC West flavor to the countdown here? So 8, Matthew Stafford, Rams.
Yep.
Kyler Murray, 7. And then we went Russell Wilson, 6. 3 out of the 4 NFC West. NFC West outlook. Which team do you think should be the favorite in the NFC West right now? We thank our friends here, NFC West Odds, provided by PointsBet. We see the Rams and the Niners both tied as favorites. And I need to point out here, in the midst of the quarterback countdown, we just saw 3 other NFC West quarterbacks in the top 10. San Fran, I think, had Jimmy G in the 20s, Trey Lance in the 30s. Do you agree that they're as likely as anybody to win it?
I do. You know, I like it because, you know, it just goes back to my old thing. Like, it's not all about the quarterback. There's more to the team than the quarterback. And, yeah, I think the 49ers stay healthy. Jimmy Garoppolo, Trey Lance, they'll be fine. To me, it's all about health. They are the best team in the NFC West, in my opinion. We've seen, you know, 2 out of the 3 years of Shanahan, the last 2 out of the last 3 years, they've had the injury bug a little bit. So that'll be big for their football team. But I think when you just look at talent, high-end talent on the starting 22, depth. I mean, again, I know the 49ers were hurt a lot last year, but let's not forget, they were never out of the playoff conversation until like the last 2 weeks because they had pretty good depth behind it to make things going. And then you add the coaching and the creativity of Shanahan and everything like that. Yeah, to me, they're in the leader house for me.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you for bringing that back. You think about the injuries that they dealt with last year, that they're even in the conversation at the end of the season, says a lot.
It says a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, and you heard me. I would argue, like, if they just managed the quarterbacks they had in a little bit, like, there's some games where I think you've heard me say this, where I just go, if they kneeled on the fucking football, they were going to win 10-0 or 7-3.
If they had pedestrian quarterback play a couple
exactly
of those games.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I expect the 49ers to be a major player this year.
Pete, Kristen, are we ready for the money close here? In partnership with Woodford Reserve Bourbon, that was the Sims Top 40 Quarterback Countdown. 8, 7, 6, and 5.
Booyah.
There it is.
Oh, baby.
Yeah.
Who do you think's going to piss everybody the most off about that right there?
About that one?
I mean, everybody in front of Brady's going to piss off everybody in New England and Brady lovers. I know that.
I think Kyler being at 7, people are going to kind of lose their mind a little bit.
Yeah, you think so?
Not everybody. Yeah. Some. I mean, that's average team. Right. Has been average.
Yeah. So you think that's the one? Yeah.
I think Kyler will bring you the most Twitter fodder for like Florio to get after you.
That's good. Okay. Okay. That's good. That's good for Matthew Stafford to be the first year he's not the number one guy to get shit on in my Twitter following.
I think the fact that you had him at 9 last year in Detroit and just bumped him up 1. I mean, I think that works pretty well.
All right. Good.
Lamar at 6. I mean, I'm going to have to see somebody new is in the top 5, and I'm not quite sure. I have a fairly good idea.
Yeah.
Who it's going to be. Lamar at 6
I'll never tell.
You're going to tell next week?
I'm going to tell next week. We got 4 more to go.
You're going to tell soon?
4 more to go. Man, they're 4 good ones, too. I mean, anybody that's smart can figure it out.
Are you including Deshaun?
I am.
Okay.
So he's still left. Okay. I mean, yeah, spoiler alert. Yeah. I mean, listen, I know he's got
I wondered when I was. Yeah. I hadn't seen him show up yet.
No, I'm including him.
Okay.
Yeah, I am.
Got it.
Yes, but not Jalen Hurts.
Not Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
I don't think
I'm going on Philadelphia
yet,
radio, I think, next Tuesday with Howard Eskin to defend myself there.
Are you?
Yes, so.
Yeah, now, is he a supporter or is he?
Well, he's nice to me. I don't know if he supports that idea, but
I didn't
we'll
mean
see.
Supporter of you. Is he a supporter of Jalen Hurts?
I don't know.
I'm going to assume he likes you.
Well, I hope so. We'll find out on Tuesday when I talk to him and he asks me all the questions that the Philadelphia fans want to ask me.
Yeah.
Right.
I hope he has left some extended time for that because that might take some minutes.
Yeah, it will. It will. I got some information. Don't worry.
Okay.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the year is back. Get ready for Way Day. For 3 days only, May 4th through May 6th, you can get up to 80% off at Wayfair. Save on sofas and cookware, dining sets and rugs and beds, wall art, bar cards, floor lamps, ceiling fans, home decor, all things outdoor, and way more. Plus, everything ships free. Don't miss the sale to get up to 80% off everything home, even a garden gnome. Way Day starts May 4th. Head to Wayfair.com now to start filling your cart.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Couple of Ask Me Anythings before we get into Quarterback Jeopardy, okay? Philip Rivers topic here, I think it's fun. From at Noah Wheeler, just curious as an extreme Philip Rivers fan, if he didn't retire this offseason, what number would you have put on him?
Ooh,
love the pod and your insight on football knowledge.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. That's a really good question.
Went to the notebook. You're serious.
I know. Well, I got to look at exactly the whole list and see.
How did you know the right page to come to?
Because I got a bunch of the torn out lists that are in there.
Yeah.
These are rough copies.
The loose leaf.
Right. So I keep them in because I wrote notes on there and things that I want to go back to a little bit. But I think we're talking about, I really think maybe somewhere in the range of.
Pete, what was he last year?
17. Yeah, it's going to be below that. And I'm going to put him below Big Ben. Man, he really realistically probably somewhere between 22 and 25, I think. 23, 24, 25.
I thought he was better than that
last year. Well, the team was really good too.
Yeah.
You know, let's not forget that. He did some good things. If he was so good though, there would have been more teams telling him, "Don't retire. We'd like you to come play." Mm. You know, I think as the year went on, you started to realize, you know, one, his decision-making was still reckless. He got away with some stuff and still had some bad moments last year where you're just like, what? And then I do think arm strength or lack of it really became a thing. Mm. They were not able to stretch the field or get people to back off a little bit. And to me, that's really where he started to hurt the team a little bit towards the end of the year. Still some good things, no doubt about it. But, yeah, I think, you know, again, the stats are going to look good. It's 2021. Drew Brees had 24-6 last year.
Yeah.
By the stats, why would you retire?
Right.
Why would you retire? 3,000 yards, 24-6, great quarterback rating. Because there's more to it than the stats. The context said you're not taking advantage of all that's to be there to be had, and your stats should be better. And that's where I think sometimes people lose that in translation to a degree.
This is from Adam, and it's also sent to Florio's mailbag. It's in parentheses here from Pete. Wanted to be sure to include that.
Good.
Okay. I recently started listening to the podcast. There's always been something on my mind. ... Why is it called Chris Sims Unbuttoned when the logo has the shirt buttoned all the way to the top?
Because this is where I unbutton my fucking mouth and give you all this great information. That's why.
That was well done.
Is that your standard response? That's pretty much.
Yeah.
It fucking comes unbuttoned. The button doesn't become unbuttoned, but my mouth does. And I can swear and really let it out and let it fly.
No buttons today either.
No buttons today either. This will be probably one of the last times I ever wear this sweatshirt. The neck's getting worn out. I don't like that it's getting so loose and stuff.
All right, good.
Thanks.
Yeah, you wear it well.
But Keith, please, if you have any questions, because lately Florio's getting a ton of emails.
About you?
About me. Mm. And he literally had so many yesterday that he sent a few through text and wrote on the bottom, "Fuck my life," which is great.
Mike did?
Yeah. Awesome. So Florio@ProFootballTalk.com. Anything you got to say about Sims, send it to him.
Send it
to my Twitter, too. I like it. But let's do both. Let's piss off Florio while we're doing it. He's my secretary. I got him. He's my work manager. I like that. Florio, my work manager.
Your associate. There you go. Before Quarterback Jeopardy, I've said before Quarterback Jeopardy a couple times. This is the big day.
Yeah.
This is a big day in history.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
You know why?
Yeah, I do know why.
A little something on June 16th, 1994.
It's funny. It's that day. I don't remember it being that day, but I can still remember
it. The Giants called Phil Sims in and said,
"Man,
sorry,
almost bring me to a tear just saying that." It's funny. I haven't really dove down this in a while. Yeah, that was a sad day. Shocker. Like, shocker of shockers.
Salary cap.
My dad is, you know, hey, my dad is famous for maybe the greatest Super Bowl performance ever.
22 or 25.
Right. Yep. The first guy to ever say we're going to Disney World.
That's right.
And really, he is the first salary cap casualty in the history of football.
Because now, he was going to make $2.3 million.
$2.3 million at the age of, he was about to turn 39.
Wow.
He was 38. Now, he was 38, and he won a playoff game the year before and went to the Pro Bowl and won the team MVP award. But he had to get a little off-season like microscopic surgery on his shoulder, and I think they thought at his age he might be done. Well, they were fucking stupid. I have nothing else to say about that. Yeah. It pissed me off that the Giants did that for a while, but I can still remember that day. Dad can tell the story really well, and I wish he was on today to tell it because – it blindsided my father.
Yeah.
He had no idea. He was in the Giants facility, like just a workout day, right? That's all they're doing. And he was great friends with Dan Reeves.
Yeah.
And Dan would always bring him up to his office and go, like, they would talk about golf. And, hey, look, I got these new clubs. And, you know, my dad was like a scratch golfer, and Dan was a really good golfer too.
Yeah.
So they had that in common. So Dad, when Dan comes into the locker room, hey, Phil, come into my office. He's thinking like, oh, Dan's going to show me his new driver or new grip he got on his. And he said he got in there, and Dan told him to sit down. And he knew, whoa, something else is going on here.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they released him. So I can still remember June 16th, 1994, me being in my old house in the bedroom. I was in the bedroom. I think I was like playing video games or whatever.
So you were like 13?
I was 13, about to be 14. And my dad came in and, hey, can I talk to you for a second? And like usually when he says that, it's something like whatever. And then he closed the door behind him. And then I was like, what? Mm. What is going on? And he told me. I was floored.
Yeah.
I mean, I was heartbroken, shocked.
Tears or anger? Which one came?
I was a little more anger right there. Yeah, I was a little more anger. I was really mad at the Giants for really a number of years. I was. I mean, I would go to games and root against them for a little bit. Like, I'd wear a Troy Aikman or a Deion Sanders jersey and be like, go Cowboys.
How long do you hang on?
I would say, like, when I got to college, I went back.
6 years later?
6 years later. I went back. I don't know. Maybe it was because I was in Texas, and I was like, oh, my New York teams and whatever. And I got a little bit of like liking Kerry Collins with the Giants, and I went back, and I haven't left since.
Man.
Yeah, it was a crazy day. Crazy day. Hurts my heart still to this day.
I can tell.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, it was close. He was close to going the next year, as I've told before on the pod, Cleveland.
Yeah,
he went there.
Almost happened.
They were broke.
Bill was there.
Bill was there. Yeah. Have the jersey with his name on it for the press conference. He almost went to Jacksonville with Tom Coughlin, and then he almost went to Arizona with Buddy Ryan. It was those three teams that next year.
So that was all in the 94 season.
It was all like early before 94, early 94 season. I thought for sure it was an awesome year.
Yeah,
I got a year of hanging out with Dad and getting him ready for football in case he wanted to play.
So like,
and I couldn't play eighth grade because I was too big for peewee football.
What?
I had to lose 10 pounds to play the offensive line. I had a big growth spurt, so I was like 6'3 and gawky and skinny, but had
to
lose like 10 pounds to play offensive line. My dad's like, no, Christopher, you're not doing it. Let's just whatever. But I would go to the field and catch footballs for him. It was awesome. Great
memories. Jacksonville 94, was Brunell there yet?
I think he was maybe just starting. It was Coughlin's first year.
Oh, 94 was their first year.
It was their first year, right? Yeah. Am I right, or was it 95 their first year? Because it might have been the next year that maybe the Jacksonville one came up. I could be wrong.
94 or 95?
I think it's 95. I might be wrong on my Jacksonville timeline. Because 96, they went to the AFC Championship game, and I believe that was their second year in existence.
And Brunell was absolutely there.
Right, right. So it might have been the 95 year that
and
they
Arizona,
were talking about.
Arizona, was that Boomer? 95 was first year for Jacksonville.
Oh, so okay, yep, there you go.
So with the Cardinals, I think Boomer was there.
It might have been, or Boomer might have.
Did he just leave?
He might have just left, or I can't remember. Not there. Maybe he was hurt at that second point.
I'm going to research this tonight.
I think he might have been on the Jets still and didn't go to 96.
Okay.
So yeah, he didn't get there yet. I think he was still with the Jets, and that's where Dad was going to do it. But I remember, like, it was are we going to move? Are we going to do this?
How can we say no to all three?
Well, my mom made it very clear that we weren't moving with him.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, so, you know, this St. Ignatius High School in Cleveland. And she goes, oh, no, we'll come visit you on the weekends. Don't worry. We'll just keep the kids in school here. I think that played part of it. Gosh, my dad was blue and blue through and through.
Yeah.
I mean, the Giants, I don't think he could really envision playing for another team, I think, ultimately.
Yeah.
And it just became too much, and that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could do a whole podcast on this.
Yeah, we should ask him. Yeah. Maybe he'll get, dad's the kind of guy, too, if you asked him, he might give you more of the true feelings that he hasn't even told me.
Yeah.
And open up about it a little bit more, about why he didn't go to these teams or things like that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Quarterback Jeopardy.
Let's do it.
Kentucky-based.
Oh, okay? Baby. Gosh.
Inspired by Woodford Reserve, and all respect to Big Phil.
I'm scared. I mean, because are there that many quarterbacks that have come out of Kentucky to make a
– So it's Kentucky and Louisville, and it's not just quarterback. It's kind of – I think it's every position thing,
okay,
right? Or is it all quarterback? Mostly quarterback.
Oh, good. Fuck you, Pete. Yeah.
It can be Kentucky or Louisville.
I got it. I'm a historian. Pete said fuck you, too.
Hope his kids aren't napping.
Yeah, they got to grow up. They got to hear it.
They should watch Django.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
For 100, two Louisville quarterbacks have been drafted in the first round, both 32nd overall. Name them. Well, two Louisville quarterbacks.
Well, Lamar.
There you go.
And then is the other – hold on. Is it Browning Nagel?
He was round two Jets, supplemental, I think.
Damn. Oh, wait, okay, so don't tell me, though.
You know this.
Louisville quarterback.
100% know it.
Wait, who am I missing out of Louisville here recently that I'm blind? It's recent?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's recent. It's in the last 10 years.
Brom went.
Still playing?
Oh my gosh. I am totally having a brain fart here.
Legendarily poor pro day.
Oh, so. I mean, I almost said him before Lamar and then wiped him out of my brain. Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah.
Duh. Yeah. I got that wrong, though. That doesn't count as a victory.
Yeah.
That was so stupid. I literally almost said Teddy B instead of Lamar and then started to think of the quarterbacks and forgot about Teddy B.
Yeah.
Whoa, I've been smoking too much weed. All right, here we go.
I felt so bad for him at that pro day.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, took his glove off.
Took his glove off.
That's if you've thrown with it the whole time, don't take it off then. That's not the time to do it.
So, like, a week later, because I went from there, I think Blake Bortles was the next day.
Yeah.
Johnny Manziel was in there. And then I went without Mayock to the Fresno State Pro Day because Derek Carr was throwing. And Norv Turner got me before and in a very nice way said, you guys were really wrong to criticize Bridgewater so much, and here's why. And he laid out all these reasons why that was not indicative at all of the kind of quarterback he's going to be. And then they were
together
in the NFL.
Him. Yeah, yeah.
Right?
And did you text Norv back and go, hey, all those things I was worried about, they came true, and that's why you're not the Vikings offensive coordinator anymore.
I did not.
Yeah.
I left that out.
No, I know. Listen, Norv, it didn't work out well. Norv's one of the great offensive minds and quarterback evaluators in the history of football, so I'm not trying to say anything there. I will say that was my first – draft in the business.
14.
And you go back and look at my Bleacher Report, it's one that I wish people would give me the notch of too. You go back and look. I was firm on Derek Carr's the guy, not Blake Bortle or Manziel or Teddy Bridgewater. And
that's played out.
Yeah, so that played out okay.
Exactly that way.
I mean, that was a weird draft.
Wasn't it?
Well, it was weird because just Manziel and Bridgewater and Bortles was all just – to me, so grossly overrated, and you couldn't tell anybody anything. You couldn't tell. I mean, I remember having a conversation with the GM, them telling me they're going to go 1, 2, and 3, and I was like, what? Are you fucking kidding me? And then the worst one went 3.
Yeah,
I mean,
right?
To me, Bortles, I mean, he can't throw. Yeah. He went 3. Throwing is important at quarterback last time I checked. So that was insane, that draft.
200. Who is the only University of Kentucky quarterback to be drafted first overall?
Tim Couch.
Yes, 99.
Boom.
No hesitation.
Yep. Hal Mumme and company and all that. I was being recruited big time by them at that point. I was thinking about it because they were throwing the ball so much.
Throwing the hell out of the ball.
My dad, of course, being from Kentucky, was like, maybe that's where I do want to go and play quarterback.
Who was the quarterback coach then? Was Leach with Mumme?
I think it was Leach. I think it was Mumme, and Leach was the OC/quarterback coach.
You could have had some pretty good quarterback meetings with
without a doubt. Leach. Yes, you're right. Me and him combined together, that could have been dangerous.
300. Big Phil is one of two quarterbacks from Kentucky to win a Super Bowl with the Giants. Name the other. I do want to point out here, Pete, that the other was not a starting quarterback.
Okay.
Okay, that's fair. So we have one of two.
Jared Lorenzen.
Yes.
There it is.
Woo! Yeah, the late great.
Yeah. I was like, damn, the hefty, yeah, the lefty, hefty lefty, man, he... Woo!
Yeah.
He had a cannon for an arm.
Right?
A cannon.
Was in the league for quite a while.
Yeah. Well, because he's one of those guys where you're just like, well, I mean, if all else fails, we'll just block it up and let him throw fucking piss missiles everywhere. He can make that happen. Like, so, yeah, but man, yeah, the hefty lefty for sure. Big time there.
Yeah. Say it again, Pete.
He's saying they brought in Lorenzen for QB sneaks.
Why not?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, 280 pounds, he can move the pile. That's for sure.
Got to be able to get a foot.
Yep.
We're up to 400. Nice recovery there.
Thank you.
With 200 and 300. Who is the only University of Kentucky quarterback to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame? This is a tough one, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
This is 500 worthy.
Yeah. What era is this? Can I at least have that
hit?
Yeah.
The era of way back.
Way back.
So not like... So I would say the 50s and 60s, Pete. Yeah.
Oh.
Both decades, if that's any kind of hint.
And he went to AFL. And he went to Kentucky, huh?
I didn't know this. Like, I'm a nerd of this kind of thing. I wouldn't have gotten it for anything. Mm.
All right. Well, I'm not going to know. Tell me what team he played for.
Played for the Raiders.
Is this...
Old.
Played for the Oilers.
Might have played for more than 20 years. Ish.
This is
the oldest quarterback ever.
George Blanda?
Yes, George Blanda.
Damn, I never knew he went to Kentucky.
I didn't either.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say George Blanda like three times there when you started to rattle things off, and I was like, wait, that's not
I had no
not
idea
Kentucky.
He's Kentucky.
That's interesting. That's a good one. I'm glad. I like that. I like that I learned something.
500.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Big Phil is one of two Super Bowl MVPs who attended college in Kentucky. Name the other. This person is not a quarterback.
Damn.
This is tough, too.
This is good.
Pete was aggressive.
I like it. It's okay. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
So, two Super Bowl MVPs.
I'm going to go with some
ball.
Yeah. But, wide receiver. It's a wide receiver.
Wow.
A wide receiver.
So,
and it's...
I didn't... It's like... And you said Super Bowl MVPs?
Super Bowl MVP.
So, Deion Branch?
Yes. I am impressed.
Yeah, that's the only one.
Golf clap.
Now, he's from. Open. Thank you very much. Is he from Florida though? He's not from the state of Kentucky, right? He just went to school at Louisville.
Went to Louisville.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. All right. That's pretty. I mean, as usual, I got the easiest one wrong. Probably.
I had some suggestions to Pete that he vetoed about two Louisville wide receivers were drafted this year.
Yeah.
Do you know who they are?
Tutu.
Yes.
Atwell.
Yeah.
And the other guy, I'm not going to come up with his name off the top of my head. What was it? Dez Fitzpatrick. Yeah. Where'd he end up? Like a fifth rounder?
One was Tennessee and one
Atwell, was... Atwell. He's Tennessee. Atwell's the Rams.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so
okay.
Tennessee.
There you go. All right, good.
I like this one.
Yeah.
So the same year Lamar Jackson went 32 in round one, one of his teammates on defense went earlier than him in the first round. And it's a player you like.
Man.
DB.
Oh,
NFC
Jair.
Yeah.
I know.
Yes.
I sometimes forget Jair went there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jair is the guy that, hey, he gets forgotten for me and for my money in the top five conversation of corners. I mean, that's he's that caliber.
You going to watch some golf this weekend?
Definitely. Like, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I love the U.S. Open.
Isn't it awesome?
Yes.
Yeah. Kristen, there it is. It's ahead of me. This weekend is the 121st U.S. Open from Torrey Pines near San Diego. From Thursday to Sunday on NBC, Golf Channel, and streaming on Peacock, Bryson DeChambeau will try to defend his title just a couple of weeks before he pairs up with Aaron Rodgers to face Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson. Who is the best golfer amongst all your ex-teammates?
I think if
there was one.
Yeah, no, there's definitely. I mean, you know, quarterbacks are all good for the most part, as long as they play. Like, I was never good, but I never really played.
Right.
Kerry Collins was very good. I think Brian Griese, probably the best one.
I can see that.
Yeah, Griese was, you know, perfect form.
Yeah.
Grew up in South Florida.
Grew up on a golf course.
Right. So he played a lot. I mean, he had the game. He had all the shots. I would always be like, damn, like his short game. I'd be like, man, that was nice.
Yeah.
You know, But yeah, I would say him. He's the one that jumps out more than other. Oh, another one. Excuse me. That was not Corona. Brett Kern, the punter for the Tennessee Titans.
I kind of remember that name.
Yeah, he's still going.
Punters.
He's
a lot of time.
A lot of time. Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they're always like, you know, everybody's still like getting undressed from practice and OTAs, and they're already in their golf gear gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he was really damn good too.
Yeah.
Golf's a good way to kind of hang out with the guys in the off season,
right?
And do that type of stuff.
Pretty fun stuff.
I'm pumped for this though.
Yeah, it's gonna be awesome.
I mean, just praying for a Koepka DeChambeau Sunday. I mean, just praying. I don't know if there's anything I'd want to see more in sports right now.
How much would you pay?
Oh, like, I'd pay a few thousand to be able to sit down and just enjoy just that on Sunday.
Mm.
Those two of the leaders last, or the caddy, I'd pay more than a few thousand. I might get involved
there.
Which
one would you want a caddy for?
Ooh, I'm a Koepka fan.
Yeah.
I don't dislike DeChambeau.
Sure.
But I like Koepka. I mean,
you might have some laughs.
Yeah, I think they're both kind of silly and funny, yeah, and whatever else. But yeah, I got respect for both. Koepka to me has like the chance to be, at least in my opinion, like one of those great all time golfers.
Yeah.
He seems like he has the mannerism and he's not affected by much. So we'll see. But I'll be watching nonetheless.
Happy Father's Day, man.
Happy Father's Day, big guy. You the man.
You know?
Yep. Hope you enjoy
the
weekend.
Fun day. Yeah, thank you.
I'm starting to feel that maybe my family forgot about Father's Day this weekend. I haven't heard one thing about it. You know, so I'm kind of interested to see where this goes. My little girl's birthday is this weekend, so I think that's distracted my wife.
Yeah.
So I don't know. If I come in here pissed off Monday,
yeah,
I'm going to be like, yeah, they forgot about me. They forgot about me.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have my 20th wedding anniversary today as well.
Whoa.
It's a big run of days in my house.
Wow. That's big time.
Yeah.
20 years.
I know. How many are you?
I'm 16.
Okay.
I'll be 17 in August.
You're getting
but
there.
But I'm getting there.
Yeah.
20, that's a landmark.
I know.
You
right?
made it. Yep.
Yes, we did.
She's obviously crazy enough to stay with you
I
that
know,
long.
Right?
Yes.
Let's see if we can get 20 more.
All right. Let's see. You can. You got that in you for sure.
Hopefully.
I don't know if she does, but you got it.
that's the real question.
Yeah, that's the real question. No doubt. All right, everybody. Be good. Enjoy the weekend. Watch the U.S. Open on NBC. It's going to be really damn good. Come on. Phil Mickelson's from there. Torrey Pines,
right.
He knows that. So that would be cool to see, too. Check me out. You know, top four quarterbacks coming out next Monday. We got Ahmed. He'll be back in the fold. Yeah, top four. We'll see what you think. It might not be exactly the way you think I would rank them. So we'll see. Is that a tease? Is it a lie? I don't know. See you Monday.
Deep teased it, yeah.
Peace out. You're the man. Thanks for driving the ship.
All right.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the year is back. Get ready for Wayday. For 3 days only, May 4th through May 6th, you can get up to 80% off at Wayfair. Save on sofas and cookware, dining sets and rugs and beds, wall art, bar carts, floor lamps, ceiling fans, home decor, all things outdoor, and way more. Plus, everything ships free. Don't miss the sale to get up to 80% off everything home, even a garden gnome. Wayday starts May 4th. Head to Wayfair.com now to start filling your cart.
Every style, every home.